Yes, Prabhu, there's some question.
Yes, Maharaj, there is one question from Subhada Didi from Tomsk, Russia.
Ah, Hare Krishna.
She asks,
Kleshagni Subhada Moksha. River Goswami defining what is pure devotion. Subhada, giving all auspiciousness. And
we know that lust is bad, L-U-S-T. Usually, when we hear the word lust, it is associated with the sexual attraction. But if a person doesn't have attraction to the opposite sex, but has the desire for sense gratification, then can that be considered as lust? So what is lust, and what's the difference between lust and envy?
Envy. You know, what is in the Bhagavad Gita? So, kama esha, krodesha, rajaguna samudbhava, maha, shano maha, papma, vidye, namiha, vairinam. Krishna is saying basically it will ruin everything. It's like a fire that just, like fire does, when fire just totally destroys something. He's telling Arjuna to beware of this. Mahapapma. Saying it's, you know, like in the topmost position. And kama, krodham, bhayam, sneha. But it's mentioned in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam that Parikshit Maharaj, he's making observations how different persons got mukti, liberation, or became free. And he's saying it's interesting, it's not always what you would think. And he's mentioning, like Kamsa, we're told, he was constantly living in fear of Krishna. But that means he was always thinking about Krishna, like 24/7. And like for many years, he's like sitting there like, thinking about Krishna all the time. And so they're saying, so then look, in the end, he did all right. You know, because his, you know, where's the Amitabh lady? This is for her. His infinite light merged into Krishna. But he didn't lose his individuality. But that, so living in fear, some who were outright envious, like Shishupal, who, just like we're told, like Prahlad Maharaj is such a great devotee from childhood, when he's doing like the Sanskrit alphabet, kaka, kaka gagana, papa baba ma, then when he said ka, he would think of Krishna and faint. They have to revive him. When he like kaka ga ga Govinda, he would faint again. So Prahlad was like that. Shishupal was the opposite. Even when he was a baby, the first words that he learned to express were aparad to Krishna. The first words that ever came out of his mouth as like a baby. Then we can understand it's of some sort of a pastime. But he has so much seeming hatred or envy toward Krishna, but he ends up getting mukti, liberated. Then all those who are so-called enemies of the Lord, it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Saraswati Thakur, with regard to the appearance of Mahaprabhu and the prayers of the devatas, And they're mentioning all of his different incarnations and the wonderful things that he does. And also the slokas from Gita, Paritranaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam. Saying like he's apparently punishing these Duskriti, the misbehaved, the miscreants, the asuras. But the outcome is they get liberation. So he's saying, so then what, and how is he bringing relief to the devotees? Saraswati Thakur makes an interesting point by saying actually, they're suffering in anticipation of his appearance. They're suffering from separation. That's their real suffering. And he's come to relieve that. Just as Guru Maharaj points out in the Hidden Treasure of the Sweet Absolute, when he's explaining the four so-called nutshell slokas, and the one that's Te Sham Evanukam Partam Aham Agyanatam. Agyanatam Tama. What is the next line? Ends on Gyani Dipena Bashvata. Something Bhavayantasto Gyani Dipena Asvata. So it sounds like it's a, and when they're overwhelmed by the darkness of ignorance or whatever else it might be, then he, Gyanadipena, but with the light of knowledge, he's revealing the Gyanadip, the light of knowledge, with that removing whatever darkness there, aham agyanajam. And Guru Maharaj is saying, how can that be for devotees? That cannot be. So then, because bhakti is higher than gyan, how can you say he's giving gyan to these suffering bhaktas? So he said, then it must not be some ordinary gyan, but how do we understand this? He's revealing himself to them. For them, that's the only really real darkness in their lives. The perceived absence of Krishna, the depths of separation, then the Lord is revealing himself, illuminating their hearts with his conception, also we can say. So, calm is the word that's used, equated with lust, generally, in Sanskrit. There are other words that mean desire and this, that, and the other thing, but most specifically, this word will be used, calm. And we're told that as far as the Braja Gopis go, that their prem resembles calm. That's how intense it is. Because that point is being made to say, if these different personalities, they got liberated, Kamsa ultimately was incessantly meditating on Krishna as an enemy, how can that be like favorable? And Shishupal and so many other demons who were killed and liberated, but saying, and these Braja Gopi girls, they appear to be like teenage girls lusting after a young, beautiful boy. So we're told that the Gopi Prem resembles Kam. But Guru Maharaj, what did he say about it? What's the difference? North Pole and South Pole. Like when we were kids and school, they go like, there's the North Pole and the South Pole. And you go like, well, what is the difference? I don't think I could tell you the difference right now, except that one's north and one is south. Because we thought, oh, they're the, what do you call them? The polar caps, ice caps. But one is a continent, the other one's not. I could never figure that out. Have to look it up on Wikipedia. Why Antarctica is a continent. Anyway, I don't want to start a debate about continents or continental drift or any such thing. But North Pole, South Pole, at least in literature and language, we use it, meaning things that look identical but are polar opposites. That's his point. So he's saying, calm, the gopi prem, the love of the Braja Gopis, it looks like calm, like aprakrita. But it's the opposite of that. So then what is it? How would you define these things? Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami comes to our aid, to the rescue. And he says, Atmendriya Preeti Banchatari Bolekam Krishnendriya Preeti Ichadari Premanam. Atma Indriya. When your object is to satisfy your own senses, whether it be erotic, you know, there's different types of sensuality if we look at it in the broad sense. That's one, it's mentioned there, erotic sensuality. But there's also other types, you know, eating, there, you know, whatever would come under that heading. Saying, if the focal point and the goal is you're targeting yourself, or a misconceived notion of self, that comes under the heading of kam. In other words, it's motive here. Like there's that expression, it began as possession is 9/10 of the law. It's an expression, but it's often paraphrased as motive is 9/10. You know, like in other words, what is the reasoning behind the movement? What is being done? So Guru Maharaj would say, for example, karma really resides in this sense in the mental and the internal plane. It's not as much the activity as the motivation for the activity. Right? Even in neuroscience, and I'm not a neuroscientist, in neuroscience they'll say, like an itch, it's something like 12 to 15% stimulus or stimuli, whichever, and the other 85% is in your mind that you can't tolerate the itch and we're scratching. They're saying it's actually very little is actually at that point. So it means what's going on internally makes it intolerable. And that's even in this regard, you know, kandurya or one of the janmaiti grihamaiti sukkam hituchcham kandurya or I forget the last line, but it's comparing that to an itch. So we can understand 85% or more is in the mind. So now we go to motive. What is the motive for why are we doing what we do? Rupa Goswami, again, defining what is pure devotion, says, Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadhyanavratam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti rutama. Uttama bhakti. What is pure devotion? Anyabhilashita shunyam. When other desires than the desire to serve, Krishnendriya Preeti Ichadari Premnam. The same things, when the target is satisfying the senses of Krishna, that goes by the name of Prem. So Rupa Goswami is saying, when you've eliminated desires, and what are the two headings? Karma and jnana. Jnana karma janavritam. He's saying it's not covered by this even. It's not disguised. It's not it's the inverse of doing some karmic organic activity in the name of pleasing Krishna. He's saying that's not pure devotion. So we hear of karma misra bhakti, jnana misra bhakti, devotion mixed with some karmic tendency, some jnanic tendency. And Rupa Goswami is saying, that is not pure devotion. So we hear of the Braja Gopis as an example, like when when they meet with Krishna at Kurukshetra, and they're having this dialogue, remember, after all this time, this intense separation that's unbearable, they're meeting with Krishna, and Radharani saying something on behalf of Brajagopis, Krishna representing himself. And after everyone else is met, and they go off into the corner somewhere, and they're revealing their hearts to one another. And one of the things that Srimati Radharani says is, you know, previously you sent Uddhava with a letter telling us that we should learn yoga and meditation. God is everywhere. And she said, we didn't think this was funny. Actually, it made us angry. You're telling us, we're the Brajagopis, we should learn yoga and meditation and sit there and think God is everywhere and everything, and that will have some connection with you. Really, you should be ashamed of yourself to suggest these kind of things. And one Guru Maharaj says in this way, she says, we have no body consciousness. Well, do yoga with what body? We have no body consciousness. It's very interesting. You think, only you, we think. They don't have a body to do something else with. And what we're showing and maintaining as bodies in the world, why do we do this? For you. And it's mentioned, that's why they dress nicely, put on makeup, earring, you know, ornament themselves. They make themselves look beautiful for Krishna. That's why they do the things. So even their apparent lust for Krishna has Krishna's satisfaction as a target, not their own. It's the opposite of this world, where we want to devour or consume a person, place, or thing to try and achieve self-fulfillment, self-satisfaction. It's the opposite. They're doing everything to please him. So Guru Maharaj, they say, no independent body consciousness we have got. And this is described in the Chaitanya Charitamritam, saying why there is not the fault, there's no fault in the gopis' love for Krishna, because it is Krishnendriya Prit, to satisfy the senses of Krishna, that they do anything. So, I remember in observing Srila Guru Maharaj and Srila Gurudev. Guru Maharaj is the guru and Gurudev is the disciple in this context. But then I saw more, they're like friends. And I could see, like two friends, and in a formal setting, like guru and disciple, but really two friends, even though there's an age difference. And then I saw, and you can see there was that one picture they have on the veranda in Navadi, where when Gurudev's reading Guru Maharaj's palm, and you see Guru Maharaj's like, he's like a child, and Gurudev's the father figure, uncle, and he's like, telling him all the wonderful things he sees in his hand. And you see Guru Maharaj looking like a child at Gurudev. And I discussed this, just share these observations sometimes, and Guru Maharaj said, yes, Dasya Rasa is not the only rasa of between the guru and disciple. He made it clear, and I make this clear before I say these remarks, he says, Madhura Rasa is out of the question. Said, but sometimes the guru and disciple have the friendship, sakura, and sometimes the disciple, like Vatsalya Rasa, is caring for the guru, who's like the child, And that I saw and thought, oh, this is so sweet, this kind of love and affection and interaction. It's not to be imitated. This is something extraordinary and by qualified higher Vaishnavas. But we could say also that the disciples proper, they're doing everything for the pleasure and satisfaction of Guru and Vaishnav. Right? And I tell you, Madhura Rasa X in that box, that's not part of this. But that's their motivation, why they do what they do. And then it's free from fault. There's no fault in that. So what was the question again? Just to rephrase.
Lust.
What
is lust, and what is the difference between lust and envy?
And envy. Sometimes Guru Maharaj and elsewhere is told that envy means the inability to see somebody in their rightful position, to not acknowledge that. It means not to really see them proper. And you know what Shakespeare called envy? He has so many, saying, one of them, the green-eyed monster. That's what he called it. It's the green-eyed monster. It's not seeing properly. What does the Bhagavatam say in the beginning? Dharmak prot, in the first three slokas, second one. Dharmak projita kaita botra paramo nirmat saranam satam. Matsarja, nirmatsarja, means to be non-envious of the satam, the devotees. Saying it's a prerequisite for Krishna consciousness proper. And I used to think about this, it's one thing, non-envious. You know, can you practice that? Like, what are you doing? I'm being non-envious. I'm practicing non-enviousness. No, I mean, it doesn't come through in English, at least, and the best possible wording, but we could understand from this, what is the symptom of being non-envious toward the devotee is to praise the devotee, not to disrespect them or criticize them, but to praise them for their devotion to Krishna. Rupa Goswami is saying this also in the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that one of the symptoms of pure devotion is pure devotees, they're always recognizing and praising the devotion of others. That's at the heart of the matter of Brihad Bhagavatamritam. You could say in one sense, what is this book about? It's on this point, the always praising the devotion of others, that will take you to the highest position. And we see there, and what is the response? The devotees being praised deflect and defer that praise to another devotee they consider higher. And it goes on and on and on like that until you reach whom at last? Radharani and the Raja Gopis, always. It's very interesting how this always, it always goes to this. We were telling the lady earlier that was reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It's 18,000 slokas there. Right? Krishne svadamo bhagate dharma jnani dibiksaha kalo nashta drishame sha purana ko dinoditaha. I remember when I saw, we were talking about graphic arts the other day. You know what an arc lamp is? It's this light where you expose negatives and plates and it's arc means it's like looking at sunlight or the Brahma Jyoti. So you're not supposed to look at it or wear a mask that, you know, a shield, a visor with a shield, an arc lamp. So this is Puran Arko Dunoditaha. And when Krishna withdrew from this plane onto the next universe, we could think, then this world is plunged into darkness. So it's saying there, then how will we get guidance? Now the world is in utter darkness. The Kali Yuga has set in with the disappearance of Krishna. It says, oh, don't you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam has risen like this brilliant sun, Puran Arko, and, you know, an 18,000 rayed sun. Each one of these slokas like a sun ray illuminating all directions and giving guidance to the souls of the Kali Yuga. So that concept, part of it, Bhaktivinoda Thakur got the inspiration and order directly from Swarup Damodar, collect 1,000 of these rays, because there's gradation and everywhere and everything. So even there, some specific slokas to be given attention and importance. And then Guru Maharaj with his 300, he was going to do approximately, where he wrote Gadadhar Pranam to give a hint of the criteria of selection and the Vyas Pranam and different prayers. But anyway, so 18,000, sometimes told 16,000 extent. And in South India, Guru Maharaj met a Shrutadhar, means whatever they've heard, they can repeat that. Right? So, and there were more such people previously. There may still be some, but so he met someone new, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Like I knew some devotees in the beginning, memorized the 700 slokas of Bhagavad Gita, and that was impressive enough, you know, that someone could recite all of them. One or two, I know, but 18,000. And Guru Maharaj met such a person and asked him, in your opinion, who are the greatest devotees? And he said, the four Kumaras, Chatushan, Sanat, Sananda, Sanaka, and Sanatan, Sanaka, the four Kumaras. I forgot one name. Sunanda, Sananda, Sanaka, Sanatan. Anyway. And the man said to Guru Maharaj, and your opinion, who are the highest devotees? And Guru Maharaj said, with all due respect, the four Kumaras, they're in the lower position. Hare Krishna. He said, they're in the lower position. And he said, with two slokas from the Bhagavatam. So think about this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in one place, uses this term, Barabhyahi Saragrahi. Barabhyahi is where he's saying, you're carrying the weight of all this Shastric knowledge like the way a pack animal carries things. You've got it all, but it's like, oh, such a burden. You know, that's one type who knows so many things about everything. See, but on the other side is the Saragrahi. Sar means cream or the essence. Grahi, one who grasps or can extract the essence. So Bhaktivinoda has that line in his English poetry. Oh, and we use this for a caption of Srila Guru Maharaj, where he's wearing the turban and looking like the line says, oh, Saragrahi Vaishnav soul, thou art an angel fair. Right. So Guru Maharaj, with two slokas, First, one from the mouth of Krishna. Na tata priyatama atmayonir nishankara na cha sankarshan na cha sri naivatma cha yata bhavan. He's saying, not atma bhu brahma or Shiva. Is going in gradation from Brahma, like Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Brahma, Shiva, you know, Lakshmi, Sankarshan, Lakshmi, like, and then he's saying, they're not as dear to me. And then he says, Naivatma, I'm not even as dear to myself. And everyone's supposed to be dearest to themselves. He said, I'm not as dear to me as Uddhava is. So in one sloka, he's established the relative supremacy of Uddhava. Then we need to hear something from Uddhava. And interestingly, what Guru Maharaj is saying here, this is in the Brihad Bhagavatamritam twice. The end of the first seven chapters, the end of the second, really, if you look. And that Uddhava says, Asam aho charanarin ujusham ahangsham brindavane kimapi gomilato sadinam yad dushtajam svajanam arjapatam chihitva bejur mukunda parivim shrutibir vimrigyam. He's saying, what the Vedas have indicated, they're just pointing in the direction. These girls, Radharani and her girlfriends, they've got it. How is that possible? These scholarly, great, the Vedas, they're only pointing in the direction. And if you follow that direction far enough, you'll see it takes you to the holy lotus feet of Srimati Radharani and the Braja Gopis, who, you know, have the copyright, trademark. They own Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in one of his songs, all the Vedas sing that Krishna is the property of Radharani and her girlfriends. They own Krishna. So in Ramananda Samba, he's saying only they can give entrance into this plane of higher service. So anyway, with those two slokas, so in that, and Uddhava, what is he saying? And this was after he brought the letter that they didn't really like too much. Then he could understand Krishna sending me with this letter for them, but actually he wanted me to see something. That person who's familiar with the queens of Dwarka and their type of devotion, and he's good friends with Narada, they know everything. And after what he sees in Vrindavan, because while he's delivering that letter, that's when Radharani spins off in her divine madness and she sees the Brahma, the big bumblebee, who's black and yellow, and he's bumbling around. And she sees him as either Krishna or the representative of Krishna. Because black and yellow, and the pollen on the whiskers is reminiscent of so many things she sees, and she starts chastising the bumblebee. That's what Uddhava saw. He's like trying to talk to these other Braja Gopis about the contents of this letter, and Radharani's carrying on a mad conversation with a bumblebee. And he's saying, like, what sort of devotion does she have? What sort of love for Krishna does she have that she's dismissing Dwarka Krishna and the things expressed there, which we cannot. But Guru Maharaj was considered his specialty by his god brothers, Bhan Maharaj, Krishna's Babaji Maharaj, and others, if on occasion they could hear him explain these things, they would consider it their good fortune. But in principle, Guru Maharaj, one thing I can say he said about it was, if you put the maximum amount of pressure on love and affection, what will it yield? That's what he said. Because we could say there's the normal flow of love and affection, but he's saying, but if you pressure that, Right? As far as possible, you put the most intense sort of pressure on it. What will it yield? That's how he came to give the title Golden Volcano, Divine Lava. He's saying these expressions from the heart of Mahaprabhu are like volcanic eruptions of ecstatic emotion. Very love under, you know, love and affection are being pressed to the extreme, and then the volcanic eruption of ecstatic emotion. And that's what's in the verses of Radharani. And one we can say, Yadanu charita lila karna piyusha viprut sakrid adanda viduta danda dharma vinashta sapadi grihum griha kutumbum dinamutrija bahuva bhikkhu bahu bihanga bhikkhu charjam charanti. And she's saying, she's as if this is a like she's lamenting how her life has been ruined by Krishna, hearing about, she said, one drop of hearing Krishna, hearing the nectar of hearing about Krishna, you're ruined forever. But it's all double talk. Everything has the opposite meaning. What she's saying is, your material life will be ruined. But for some people, we could say, well, that's life. Is there any other kind? Yes, that's the spiritual project, is that there is another type. So she's saying, one drop of this nectar of hearing about Krishna and ruined forever, meaning you will no longer be able to take the world seriously, at least seriously in the sense of envisioning yourself as finding yourself and satisfaction and place in that world. It's ruined forever. Right? That's a good type of ruin. Right? You can't, once you've been awakened, it's hard to pretend to be asleep. You know, we know that from even, you know, regular experience. Like once you're sort of awake, you're awake, and then you cannot, once you've awakened to this possibility, this prospect, to try and like go to sleep again in the mundane, is not an option. And this is dealt with by Narada to Vyas, in the where he's chastising Vyas and saying, what he did not do properly is express Krishna conception. And again, this that there is another life. Otherwise, you think you're making people think like they'll follow some religion, tradition, and be happy in the world. Seeing that's not the idea. You have to make them understand there's possibility of a life of love and the full spectral range of sensual possibility in the world, and it's real. That's what they need to hear. That's why they need to hear the pastimes of Krishna. But interestingly, 10th canto is where they're given, and 9 cantos, introduction to that. 9 cantos of prerequisite to get to the point of where Krishna appears as a baby. Why? Because without all of this background understanding and a strong foundation, then we're likely to think of Krishna as an ordinary person or an extraordinary person, but not Swayam Bhagavan, the original supreme personality of Godhead. So there Radharani saying, karna piyusha viprut, piyush means nectar, and if a drop of this nectar enters your ear and goes to the heart. And the Bhagavatam twice has the sloka that says, bidyate, with different endings, bidyate hridaya granti chidyante sarva sangshaya chiyante yashit karmani mayi drishte akhilatmani. The lust has a stranglehold on the heart, right? The core of our consciousness. Freud understood this in a perverse way. It is an observation he made that cannot be challenged. He's saying he observed, but in a perverse way, that Eros is the driving principle of existence. Like when we think of Italy and those old paintings, and you always see Cupid, you know, floating around in the picture with his bow, and someone being struck by Cupid's arrow, and then they become mad. Right? So he realized, oh, this is the driving principle of material existence and human civilization, even animal civilization, insect civilization, here we say lizard civilization. It's the driving principle. And we hear in the Gita, this world is the spiritual world upside down. Right? It's a perverted reflection. So it means that principle has its place in the original. That's good news, because otherwise we think, well, why? How important is this, or is this peripheral, tangential, anecdotal, secondary? No, if we're not properly educated about that and that possibility, Prabhupada mentions this, quoting Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur in his purport in the first sloka of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmadyasya Yataha, saying, then, he said, indirectly, this is why Mayavadis, he said, are giving impetus to mundane sensuality, because they don't allow for any possibility of that being expressed in the spiritual world. So then the conclusion will be that tendency can only be expressed here. Whereas Nard is telling Vyas, no, you have to expertly, carefully let people know what sort of prospect they have. So nine cantos to come to that point. But sometimes Krishna, Gurudev, said things like, he could take all this philosophy and condense it into one statement. And let's just say, someone had done something wrong once. And Gurudev, this is how he described, because he's always saving the devotees. And he said, if Krishna is like that, then we can forgive those who are mam eva angsa jiva loke jiva, you know, everyone's part of Krishna. He can say that. But he's saying, in other words, but not the way it's being expressed here. Prabhupada says in one of his purports, our natural love for Krishna has been perverted into a lust for matter. So he's saying it is that same tendency, but here it is, it's being misdirected toward the lowest thing. Whereas when properly expressed, it's the highest thing. That's why it's called perverted reflection of the spiritual reality. So hearing that, Uddhava, and hearing the expressions of Radharani, the Brajagopi, gopis, he concludes, they're so high. I cannot directly ask them for the dust from their lotus feet. They will never give it. They're too humble and self-demeaning. That this is mentioned by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur in the comments, because why not just ask? They're right there in front of you. Saying, he realized that they're not going to do that for me. He's saying, but, so how does he couch his prayer? If I could be a brajalata, a creeper, a blade of grass, if I could have an atomic presence in the Chinmoy super enriched Chinmoy soil of Vrindavan, then when Radharani, Radha, Padman, Kitadam, Vrindavan, Jaram, she's moving there her lotus feet or touching the soil of Vrindavan, he's saying, then some of the dust from her lotus feet will come upon my head, thereby consecrating my existence. That means he understood why Krishna sent him there. But I mention this for a reason, when Radharani and when they're telling Krishna about no body consciousness, main, you're saying the different envy, right? That was the question. So the Bhagavatam saying, if you cannot, nirmatsaranam. It's all right. If you cannot praise the devotees, right? That's the what I the way I went. Non-envy is not the Brihad Bhagavatamritam, praising one devotee after another, going higher, higher. The Bhagavatam saying in the beginning, you have to appreciate and praise the position of the devotee. Otherwise, you can't enter into Krishna conception proper. So we're told, what is the fault of Mirabai? As Guru Maharaj said, she, with her song, she appears to be mad in praise of Krishna, but no mention of Radharani or Brajagopis, the Asraya Vigraha, of whom we must take shelter to have a meaningful, substantial relationship with Krishna. So Guru Maharaj calls it fictitious devotion. So praise for the devotee not be means to see them in their rightful position. That's to be non-envious. So we think, oh, the devotees, the real devotees, the most substantial devotees, the higher devotees, they like to see Radha and Krishna together. That makes them happy. So when Saraswati Thakur would hear that song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he's saying, I don't like to see Chandravali and her group, and particularly Saibya and Padma, because their mouth, they say things that are particularly egregious. I don't like to see their faces, hear what they say, or even see their faces. You know, Saraswati Thakur's body would jerk like that, as though it was like the sentiment was striking his heart. So they're that devoted to Srimati Radharani, they always want to promote her to Krishna. And that's the secret of the Bhagavatam. It's saying nirmatsaranam satam, to be non-envious of the devotee. But as Guru Maharaj expresses in his sloka, what really is to be understood in summary, that's Srimad Bhagavatam, yadamiyam mahima sri bhagavatyam katayam pratipatam anubhutam apya labdabideya tad akila rasa murti shama lila avalambam madura rasa di sri radha pada padmam prabhadye. Ostensibly, her name is not mentioned there. He's saying, but every step of the way, every page, every story is taking you in a particular... The Bhagavatam is not a random collection of stories. It's not that. It's not just saying, oh, here's some interesting Puranic tales that it'll be beneficial for you to hear. No, it's thematic. It's sequenced, it's going, it's moving in a particular direction. It's the careful reader under the guidance of Guru and Vaishnav is being taken in a particular direction. And Guru is saying, what is that? Krishna conception proper, which means service at the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. Shyama Lila. It's interesting here, choice of words of Guru Maharaj, because that means madura rasa, but shyama means black or dark. What's not, in this sense, what is not easily understood or can be seen easily, that's how this is used. Gurudev told me once, he said, black is the color of madura rasa. It's mysterious in that sense. Not opaque, but opaque to the envious, you could say. But to the non-envious, they can have entrance who understand, and I was mentioning this earlier, Radharani has the capacity to extract the most nectar from Krishna, right? Predominating moiety, predominated moiety. Predominating half, predominated half. So Krishna is Rasaraj, rasa personified. But who can interact with him directly? You have a tiny finite soul, it's going to directly interact with Krishna. That's a fine and wonderful thing. What are they going to extract from him? Infinite from their point of view, a drop of the infinite is infinite, but according to their capacity. Then you have Radharani, who's not only equal, but I like to say the better half of the sweet absolute. She's interacting with Krishna as an equal, or in these loving affairs, greater. She's extracting, that's why she's Mahabhav. She's extracting the highest quality and the highest quantity of nectar from Krishna. And what is she doing? Nourishing her service, serving group, servitors, attendants with that. In other words, what is beyond their constitutional capacity as jiva souls to experience, way beyond, infinitely beyond that. That's what she's nourishing with, what is called Mahabhav. We're told, no one can experience that except Mahaprabhu Radharani. But Guru Maharaj said, what is the unique aspect of the Rupa Nuga line? Is they're so dedicated to Srimati Radharani exclusively and serving her at her time of greatest necessity that Radharani takes Mahabhav and is nourishing them with that out of gratitude, saying, here, taste what we're tasting. And Guru Maharaj's words where he said, once you've had a taste of that substance, said, what to speak of all other tastes, all other rasas are tasteless in comparison. That is the Rupa Nuga line, that is our line. And so to recognize her greatness, non-envious, to recognize her greatness, jadi gaur nahoita, tabiki hoita, kamuridaritam dehi, radhar mahima prema rasasima jagata janatake. Why did Krishna descend as Mahaprabhu? To tell about the greatness of Radharani to everyone. Radhar mahima, her greatness, and what kind of love she has for Krishna, to spread that. And the only place where I can see where envy had could be seen in a favorable way is Rupa Goswami's sloka from Chandravali about expressing or envy, the gopis' envy towards the flute. Then it's like a sweet thing. They're saying, this flute, which is dry bamboo, and they use the word that means holes and faults, chidra, means hole or fault. So the flute, it has so many holes, right? But there, it's double meaning. You think, full, so many faults, dry piece of wood, no rasa, totally dry, and then pressed against the lips of Krishna in an endless stream of nectar going through the, what is this madness? You think, this, what was meant for the gopis, and there's not even a, and the flute is a male. It's like a humorous sloka, but it's very revealing. But she's expressing some envy, but then we can understand how exalted is the flute of Krishna. So in that verse we mentioned before, Brahma Samhita, katha ganam natya gamanam, what does it say next? Priya, what is it? Bangshi, Priya Saki, and he's always with his dear friend, Priya Saki, his dear friend, the flute. That Krishna. So, Radharani is saying, if we hear these things, then the bad things in us will vanish, is what she's saying when she says you become ruined. This is desirable ruination. Ruination nation. Any other question?
Well, question from Gupta Govardhan, simple one, as soon as we don't have so much time. When did you, Maharaj, realize that Krishna consciousness for you, that Krishna consciousness for you is for real?
Well, I suppose that could be answered in different ways, but because there's various stages of realizing that, and we think, we hope we're realizing that, going in that direction. But I remember as a teenager reading the Bhagavad Gita, what could just simply be said as the day I realized Krishna was God. I remember that as being a stellar moment. So that I thought, I need to tell my best friend. It was like, I have something major to share with you. And I called my friend, he came over to my house, and I was like, trying to steady my nerves and saying like, and how to help him understand this. And I mean, this is without training and things, so it's a little odd. But I thought, what can I say to him to sort of like open his mind to, I mean, it's very open to begin with, but like something that you've just never heard before. That would give you some insight to the direction this is going. And for some reason, I was quoting the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning, and it's like, Imam vivasvate yogam proktavan aham avayam vivasvan manave praha manur iksvakave brabit. Where Krishna is saying, I spoke this to the sun god, he spoke it to his son, Ikshaku, and on. And then there's a purport, but in the beginning, Prabhupada says, herein we find the history of the Bhagavad Gita traced from a remote time when it was delivered to the kings of all planets. So that's what I thought. I said, because I want him to read the book. And I said, this book is being read on other planets. And he thought, like, heavy. Right. Well, because, you know, like you say, this book is a great book. It's a book to be read again and again. Or, you know, I said, this book is being read on other planets. And he said, all right, I'll read it, you know. But, you know, we feel by the grace of our Guru Varga that, like Guru Maharaj would say, you know, we're happy to know we're going in the right direction. We don't, like someone asked Guru Maharaj once, and a very like feeling way, actually, this one devotee from ISKCON in the aftermath of Prabhupada's disappearance, he was really struggling. And he went, I brought his old friend of mine, brought him to the mud. He asked many wonderful questions. There were great dialogues, and he took some nice pictures of Guru Maharaj too. He's a photographer. But one day, now he has like growing, developing faith in Guru Maharaj. And he said, have you seen Krishna? And he said, and I know, you know, normally we think people like that, we dismiss them as being bogus. And he said, but this was the point he made that was good. He said to Guru Maharaj, he said, but I know that you're not a bogus person. You are a pure devotee. You're the real thing. And it'll just help. I just need to know. Like, you know, it was like, and Guru Maharaj said, I do not have the audacity to say that I have seen Krishna. He said, but I will say this. We're told by the great devotees, there are signs you see along the way. And he said, I'm seeing that you're going in the right direction, and I'm seeing those signs. And I thought that was a very beautiful answer. And he told the time when Saraswati Thakur, two chairs were drawn in a secluded place, and one, you know, dignified gentleman in chair, and with Saraswati, and that man came face to face and said, "Have you seen Krishna?" And Saraswati Thakur said, "If I have, and I tell you I haven't, what good does that do you?" And the inverse, "If I haven't, and I tell you, how does that change your position, whether I've seen Krishna or not?" And we can say, under the influence of Guru Maharaj's conception, Krishna is infinite. So back to what Radharani is saying, she's saying, if a drop of hearing about Krishna touches your heart, we can say from another point of view, it's the beginning of seeing Krishna. It's infinite. There is no end to seeing Krishna. There is, you understand, that would be a static position. I know that's not the question I'm being asked. I've moved on. You understand, like, I've seen, it's hogya, you know, it's finished. No. We're told, there's a verse that's saying that how, Mahaprabhu's Radha Bhava Dyuti Subalita heart is mirroring Radharani's heart, but whose heart is like a mirror of Krishna Prem. Like in that song, Gurudev, like that, Tungamani Mandire. And I said, what does it mean? He said, means like on a high hill, Radharani, where she is, her heart is like a lighthouse of Krishna Prem. It's like, and I remember, if you ever been to an old style lighthouse, inside are these mirrors. There's a lamp and there's mirrors, and it's like reflecting and all these, it's an extraordinary thing. He said, so her heart is like a lighthouse of Krishna Prem. So why did I say that? Because, mirroring, that we're told when the gopis look at Krishna, and this goes back to the original thing, it's actually on theme about lasana, they're so happy to see Krishna, they're already inconceivably beautiful, but they become more beautiful. And then Krishna, he's looking at the Braja gopis, and he sees they're becoming more beautiful, and that makes Krishna more beautiful. And then the Braja gopis see Krishna's becoming more beautiful, and then they become more beautiful, and we're told. So there's this infinite competition of that. So what is it to see Krishna? We're told, like Rukmini, Srutva Gunan Bhuvana Sundara Svanvatam Te, she's saying, by hearing about you, I saw you. By hearing about your qualities, I saw you. Right? It's the hearing about Krishna from, you know, Shradhan Bhuta Anushranaya Datta Barna Yeja. That's the beginning of seeing Krishna. We all get some impression. Right? It's a very beautiful and wonderful thing, actually. When Prabhupada had the artist making these pictures, because remember, he's giving a talk and he says, so he's in New York, it's like 1965, 66, and he says, so we've all seen pictures of Krishna on posters or calendars, and there's like dead silence in the audience. And you hear Prabhupada go, oh. Like he suddenly realizes, these people have never seen a picture of Krishna. Like, oh my, you know. And he, not only because of, but he makes an art department, they're drawing so many pictures of Krishna. And then at some point someone said, because, you know, one artist draw this way a little bit, another one that way. Sometimes we resonate with that, other times not. I mean, it's a complex thing. And they asked Prabhupada, is that what Krishna really looks like? And again, this is a Prabhupada story, where he said, not exactly, but you'll recognize him when you see him. So, who's infinitely beautiful, it means gradual expression, gradual realization, appreciation. But I like the way Prabhupada put it in his prayers, the Srila Saraswati Thakur, 1933, I think. You know, it says, for the members of Sri Gaudiya Math. We quoted part of that in the Sri Guru and His Grace. Later on in the talk, he says this one line that I find very helpful, hopeful, meaningful. He says, although it is imperfectly that we have realized this, meaning Krishna consciousness, he said, although it is imperfectly that we've realized it, still we are convinced that this is the thing, you know, that is the panacea for suffering humanity. So along those lines, we'll say, we don't have the audacity to say we've realized, but we'll say, although we've imperfectly realized this, but we're convinced this is it. This is the ultimate thing. And there may be a stage in our life when we felt that reality come to us. But as I say, it's only in levels of realization. Like I like that title of that one chapter that was, you know, levels of God realization. It's something that is continual, right? As Gurumar said, the signs to be going in the right direction of that. Hare Krishna. Hari Haraya Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namo 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 Hari Haraya Yadavaya Madhavaya Kesavaya Namo Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan. Give her the book with the song. Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan. Give her a book. Show her where the song is in the songbook. Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Chandra Sulakshana. Show her where Hari Haraya is in the book. How many times do I have to say it? Take a songbook. I told her I want to learn the song, Hari Harai Nama Krishna. So you take the songbook, so here is that song, and we're singing that song. Understood? Huh? Close? Hare Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Chandra. Garadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Rupa Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath Sri Chaitanya, what is it? Gochai Kori Charana Bandhan Jaha Hoite Vignanash Abhishta Puran. Echai Gochai Jarmui Tarodas Kansabara Padarinu Mora Panchagras Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sanevas Janome Janome More Iyabilas Echai gochai jabe braje koilo vas. Echai gochai jabe braje koilo vas. Radha Krishna Nitya Lila Korilo Prakash. Anande Bolo Hari Bhaja Vrindavan. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majai Aman. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pad Padma Koriya. Hari Nam Sankirtan Kohe Narottama Das. Hey Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nitai Gaura Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Gaura Hari Bo. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Sattara Sattara Sri Srimad Shobhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Philobhakti Rakak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Bhagavan Philobhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Jai Saparikar Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Radha Raman Sundar Jiu Ki Jai. Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai. Sri Rupanuga Guru Varga Ki Jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gova Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Govinath. Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadeep Dham Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Ki Jai. Sri Gupta Govardhan Ki Jai. Ganga Devi, Jamuna Devi, Bhakti Devi, Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Om Vishnu Pad Vishva Varenya Srila Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Madhacharya Brinda Ki Jai. Jai Srila Bhakti Bhimala Avadhut Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Srila Bhakti Ranjan Madhusudan Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Srimad Manendra Mohan Prabhu Ki Jai. Srimati Krishna Kanta Didi Ki Jai. Seva Brinda Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai. Nitai Go Premanande.